Can't believe it's episode 100. It's been a solid 3.5 years of talking about code. The more we learn, we grow, but I really still can't believe that we're still here. I can't believe it's episode 100. That's like 100 hours of this show. Plus getting guests together and being our own testers. We've seen some tools emerge and others go. I can't believe it's episode 100. Today we're going to look back at that. What's changing, what we think will be the future. So thanks for listening. Now let's kick back. Welcome to Tools Day, a podcast about tech tools, tips, and tricks every other Tuesday at 2. I'm your co-host, Yuna.
And I'm Chris.
And today we're talking about
Nostalgia,
yeah. Well, for this show, it's episode 100, which is like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe that we have recorded 100 episodes of this show now. Like, can we get a round of applause from ourselves to ourselves?
Yeah. Our first episode was October
19th, 2015. And so much has changed. When we started the show, Chris and I were both working at IBM.
Yeah.
At IBM Design, and you weren't even working on the design system then. I was, and then we ended up working together on that for a short time, and we started this as like an IBM public radio, open source sort of like, hey, let's just get together and talk about all the code stuff we like to argue about.
Yeah, it was one of those things when we first opened the show. We'd open it with, you know, you are a front-end developer, I'm a front-end engineer. No one knows the difference because I was technically part of the engineering team back then, and there's all this hoopla about what is a developer versus engineer, which still exists today.
I mean, I guess there at that company specifically, it was like two different roles and teams where in the design lab, the design world, they had front-end developers, and then I guess in the engineering world, they called them UX engineers?
Front end engineers. And then they later changed it to just software engineer.
Yeah, it's all really the same. It's just like your title can change so much and vary so much from job to job.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited to talk to you about like what we talked about 4 or 3 years ago and what's changed and what's still relevant. But before we get into that, we do have one sponsor today. And that sponsor is Datadog. Datadog is a software as a service based monitoring platform that provides dev and ops teams with a unified view of all their systems, apps, and services. You'll be a part of thousands of organizations who already rely on Datadog to collect, visualize, and alert them of abnormalities. There are over 200 turnkey integrations, including AWS, Postgres, Kubernetes, and Slack, all done out of the box with custom metrics to gain full stack observability with a unified view of all of your systems, apps, and services. Other key features include real-time visibility from customizable dashboards, algorithmic alerts like anomaly detection, outlier detection, forecasting alerts, end-to-end request tracing to visualize app performance, and real-time collaboration. Datadog is offering listeners a free trial, and as an added bonus for signing up and creating a dashboard, they'll send you a free t-shirt that has a dog on it. Start a free trial today at datadog.com/toolsday to get your free dashboard and free t-shirt. Again, that's datadog.com/toolsday. So before we dive into like what's changed in the tech world, what's changed with you, Chris? I was just saying that I'm surprised that we still make the time every other week now to record the show and to catch up and to talk about what we're working on and our opinions on web development.
Yeah. I mean, 4 years ago, I had never done anything with Node before. I was very proficient in jQuery.
I feel like we were working on Node stuff together 4 years ago.
We were, but it was my first time doing Node. Well, I had never written a Node microservice before, right? So I hadn't done any of the backend stuff. I knew JavaScript and really knew jQuery really well. But I hadn't done like API design or API stuff at all, really, because my prior job was on a marketing team where we built, you know, flashy websites or stuff for, you know, campaigns.
Wow, that kind of brings me back, because I also, when I was living in Austin, we were both living in Austin at the time, by the way. We're both not living in Austin anymore. I used to go to Node Camp, and it was like a monthly meetup where they would walk you through. They had like a specific curriculum. And they would go like through like file system and all that stuff, and like it was all in terminal. And yeah, I would go to those and learn about Node, and I would also run workshops about SAS, and it was just such a different time in my life.
I remember they were like, they asked me, you know, can you do Node? And I was like, yeah, of course. And then I spent a bunch of time cramming Node.
Yeah, we talked about Express a lot. Because it was like new to us, and it was sort of new to the Node world even.
New-ish.
I mean, it's not new, but like...
Yeah.
I mean, SAS wasn't new either, but we talked about that because everybody was using SAS.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, yeah, like SAS came out in 2007.
I think... 4 years ago, I had only briefly touched SAS. No, sorry, that's wrong. I'd used SAS quite a bit at that point. Let's see, I had done almost no React at that point.
React was a baby. I don't even know if they had announced it yet.
They had announced it, but it was like 0.11 or 10 or something like that. It was quite new. But I remember this because I got into a discussion about with IBM Cloud saying we should swap to React. And the back engineer or the other engineer was like, oh, sent me like an Amazon list of Backbone books versus React books. The number of books as a reason why we should use Backbone as opposed to React.
I remember going to JSConf Amelia Island in 2015 and they did a React talk. And everybody was like, what is this stupid BS? Like, why would you ever write your code like this?
Yes, I had...
And you were there too, weren't you?
No, that was the year before I joined.
Oh, okay.
I joined, or maybe not a year. I joined July 2015.
I guess this was in 2014 then. Okay, so I'm thinking like back when I started at IBM. React was like just announced then and everyone was kind of... It's amazing how much changes.
I know. Like I remember the very first time I saw React, it was at my prior job. We were using Angular a bunch, and I saw React, and I was like, why would anyone ever, you know, move from the safe, warm comfort of Angular to React? And I was wrong.
Let's see. When's the first time we talked about React? React, January 5th, 2016.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean...
And we why it's so darn hard to get started with.
Yes, that's so funny. I guess we had both like tried it and we were like, this is weird, but important and has benefits. So we should talk about it on the show.
Yeah. Well, we were going through a bunch of frameworks. We did Ember right after that. And
Ember. Wow. And then Express, and we talked about middleware.
Yeah.
Static site generators. Like, okay, so our first show episode was Task Runners, which was Grunt, Gulp, Broccoli, Brunch, Mimosa. Oh my.
I remember at the time, I think we both used Grunt and Gulp, but neither of us had used Broccoli, Brunch, or Mimosa. And I only recently found out that Broccoli was big because the Ember toolchain uses Broccoli. I didn't know that at all at the time. So
I still have not used Brunch or Mimosa.
Yeah.
But I mean, I still use Grunt and Gulp all the time. I thought, like, if we were to do a predictions episode 2 years ago, I would have predicted that I'm not using those build tools anymore. Especially, like, I mean, everything's in Webpack now, but some of the technologies that I have websites built on and like all my slide frameworks, that aside JS, Reveal.js, sorry, uses Grunt. And so I use that. Or Gulp. I don't remember which one. But Deckel uses Grunt. So.
I still
have my sight in that.
I will say that we have a couple Gulp scripts left, but by and large, I have removed Gulp from my toolchain. I just use Node scripts directly now.
I definitely don't use it in new projects, but
my old ones
still exist. And I mean, it works fine.
It works fine. It's one of those things where the abstraction in 2015, I think, was super necessary because it was just hard to read JavaScript tasks at the time. And now it feels like with ES 2015 and beyond and all the great libraries, it's almost easier to just write an NPM script that says, you know, image min, my files, I'm done. Versus,
but I also think that we're using Webpack for everything now.
That's true, yeah.
So a lot of what we used to use Gulp for, which was like minification of files and running it through processing and like plugins, running it through plugins, it's all Webpack.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I guess, yeah. And so you're right, you know, I don't do any of that manually now. You know, if I want to manage images, like, yeah, Webpack. Webpack gives you the great part.
Or you use something like, I don't know, say you're using Gatsby. It has its own image minification and like cool things.
Yeah.
Gatsby wasn't around. lot of these things weren't around.
Yeah. We talked about Browserify and Webpack right after that, and AMD and CommonJS.
Yes.
Browserify is no more, pretty much.
I remember when I was learning how to write shell scripts too.
Yeah.
And like using those in my package.json. Mm. And that, I don't know, I'm sure we talked about it, but I don't think we did like a specific episode about it.
I think we did a show on setting up your
dev environment.
Dev environment, and in there we had some shell scripts.
Yeah. I wrote a blog post about writing your own custom shell scripts because I got really into it, and I ended up writing like a whole like task management system in my command, like my command line.
Yeah.
Like a little like to do. I did, wow, I forgot about this. I did like a every single day for 3 years, a happy moment every day.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah. I
built an app around it.
Yeah.
Like a random moment. That was fun. I use a CLI for that.
Yeah. My shell scripts are basically my computer or my environment. And so like I have a Git repo called .files. And I actually think we talked about this in that dev environment podcast or episode in 2015. And it hasn't changed for me. It's actually, I've updated the same .file repo for the last 4 years or so. And still great. So
I will say that I too am pretty much using the same shell scripts that I was using 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I mean, I have my core ones, like a server and just getting navigating the Git commands, shortcuts.
Yeah. The ones I added over the years, I think I actually talked about in 2015. Like I don't know if, I don't remember if I had added Z yet.
Z shell?
No. Z is this little script that memorizes the places you go to in your CLI, in your terminal prompt. And so after a while, it can autocomplete entire routes for you. So if I'm anywhere inside my terminal, I can type in Z component library and it'll go to whatever place that is, as opposed to me typing out, you know, CD, home, projects, Netflix, tools, component library. It just jumps straight to the...
But with Z shell, it does automatic tab completion too.
Well, no, so this is not tab completion. This is routing, basically. So I don't have to be... I don't have to memorize where my folders are.
Yeah.
As long as I know their name, Z will take me there.
I feel like my folder structure is just that in which I know where things are, and I keep it like super flat. I just have like a dev folder on my desktop. And I have a dev shortcut. So dev, if I type in dev, will open that dev folder no matter where I am. And then in there, I have like work and personal. And then that's it. But I can totally see how that's useful.
Let's see. We had our first design systems, but it was called style guides.
Oh, yeah. And pattern libraries.
And pattern libraries. Creating scalable style guides, not design systems.
Still working on that. I see here that we talked about offline first and service workers in May 2016. Am I skipping ahead?
No, that's fine. We can skip ahead. Offline first, I feel like...
My opinion on that has like sort of changed a little bit.
Yeah, same.
When it came out, it was like super shiny. New. It's just like SAS nesting, for example.
Yeah,
We're like, wow, very cool. And then you realize like with great power comes great responsibility and you're still storing that data. So be careful.
It's one of those things where service workers gets you most of the way there for some offline first things, but you have to change so much your application to properly utilize offline first methodologies that like the business requirement for offline first for the apps I work on are very limited. Yeah, and so I just never get around to it.
The apps you work on also are internal apps.
That's fair.
Where I think there's a very strong use case for offline first in media. Example, I take the subway to work and I'm on my phone and I get frustrated because I lose service. So if there was a way to cache what I'm reading, consuming that media,
yeah,
that's useful.
That's fair. I just feel like it's one of those things that it's everyone agrees it's useful, but like on the priority list of things, it just keeps, like, for example, the new Twitter.
I think it depends. It's more useful for some things than others. I think it's not useful for what you're working on.
Well, no, for example, the new Twitter homepage has a bit of offline first stuff, offline stuff, where like they keep the shell of the UI and the service worker, but none of the content stays, right? And Twitter is a classic example, which would be great if you had offline saved data so you could keep on scrolling even if you lose connection or not. And they haven't done it. And I just have to assume some PM was like, you know, we'll do it tomorrow. As opposed to today, you know?
Yeah, I get this shell thing too, because like perceived performance, when you're loading the connection, at least you have the shell. But I hear you, it's kind of like frustrating.
I agree that like for a lot of these apps I use when I'm commuting, it would be great if I had it. But it just feels like nobody cares enough to do it. I don't know.
We did a show about static site generators in 2016. I think we did another show on that later, and maybe another one, because they're so useful.
Yeah.
And then we got into, like, I don't know, unit testing, game engines, CSS.
Yeah, we did a lot more CSS, I think, in the olden days. And as we've kept on talking, we do more and more JavaScript.
Kind of. I think that we still talk about CSS a lot lately, but we talk about it in a programmatic way.
Yes.
Where, like Houdini stuff, it's all like a programmatic JavaScript-based way to style, but it's still CSS, and so it's interesting to me. But there was a lot of new stuff that came out in CSS, like grid, backdrop filter just came out, which
Wait.
What it's been around in Safari for years, but Chrome just released it in the latest.
Blurring of color.
It's basically lets you filter behind a div or in any element. So you can do, like you gave an example of a blur behind that element. So if it's dynamic and you can move it around the screen, whatever's behind it will blur.
That's super cool.
Yeah, it is really nice. And it's something that I've been waiting for. And I just got in. And like, we've been talking about blend modes and filters for 4 years.
Yes.
And that's still not in Microsoft's product, but it will be soon.
I think it's one of the things with CSS where I feel like the JavaScript landscape has evolved quite quickly, and the browsers have also kept up in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the CSS landscape the spec has evolved quite a bit, but it's taken a lot longer for all the browsers to keep up.
Yeah. I think like looking through our show, we actually do a really good job balancing writing about Java, talking about JavaScript and talking about styling.
Yeah.
And like a lot of it's intermingled, like CSS and JS we talked about a bunch last year. We did shows about serverless right after shows about stylus. You had like a little stylus moment.
Oh, yeah. When I first joined Netflix, I was super into stylus for about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's when we recorded the show.
We have to do a show on it.
And then after that third week, I was like, never mind. This is the worst thing that anyone ever created.
Which was brought to life in the next episode.
Yep.
We talked about Netlify March 2018. Wow. I love Netlify now. I use it all the time.
I don't use it all the time, unfortunately, but I want to.
It's so good I use it for side projects, but it's such a great tool. I never use GitHub Pages anymore.
Yes.
And I used to be like a GitHub Pages all the way.
Yep. I think one of the interesting things we used to do a bit more of was the tools around coding as opposed to just code. So, you know, over the years we've done travel, hardware, writing. We should bring some of those back. Digital nomading.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. Those are like fun things to talk about.
We had an early one about remote collaboration.
Yes.
I wonder what is your opinion about it now?
I feel like I don't do it that much. It depends on what you mean by remote collaboration.
Yeah.
My team's remote. Yeah. I've worked in remote teams in the past. I've worked in non-remote teams in the past. I think it's great to have remote as an option. And I find no problem collaborating remotely. But I think that what we talked about specifically in that show is like getting in the same browser together, getting in the same like text editor together. VS Code just had all these new collaboration features that you were talking about. And they were super cool, but I don't actually use them in real life. I feel like collaboration is just kind of like PRs and then comment on the PRs and work that way.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I use them every now and then. I've actually, so I was very pro remote before, and I think I've slowly gone away from that in some ways. I think not so much in our teams. Like, I think if you have a team of engineers, it's pretty easy for anyone to be remote. That's fine. I found that it's very hard to work with remote designers and remote PMs on a product.
Okay.
Something to think about. Anyways.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, so I'm looking at some stats right now about Tools Day shows, episodes. So our top 10 episodes, the number one episode, since we started doing stats on this, which was like 2018 anyway. So
well, we had some stats before too, right? We had the old stats.
I don't know where those are. What did we use to host before Simplecast?
We had Libsyn before.
Okay. Pull that up while I talk about the top 10 episodes.
I paid for that for like an extra year by accident.
Nice. Libsyn, can we have that money back? Okay, top episode that since 2018 is the generative art episode with Tim Holman.
Okay.
Which is cool. He did he's great. He's a great guest and he does really cool work with generative art. If you're into that, definitely check out that episode. It's episode number 78. And then after that, following that comes Cubs number 5, which means Chris and Una build stuff. It was a series that we did where we built things and talk about our experience building that stuff with the new technology that we hadn't used before. So the episode on React Native is the one after that. And then JavaScript interaction libraries. So that's another. We did a lot of shows about animation interaction, I feel like, over the past few years. The fourth top episode is Redux Dead?
We need some more hot drama topics like that.
I love that. Hot drama. Then What's New in React, episode 83. After that was Next.js, development platforms, Gatsby.js with Jason Langsdorf, CSS gripes, and then CSS and JS. There's the top 10.
Yeah.
The gripes episode was so much fun. I'm actually super glad that people enjoyed it too. And also, this is kind of skewed data because, of course, episodes that have been out for a little bit longer are going to have more downloads than episodes that we just released.
Yeah. I just checked Libsyn. Unfortunately, they seem to have removed all of our data. So
great.
Nothing there.
Great. Thanks, Libsyn.
Yeah, we swapped to this, I think, I don't remember, September, maybe?
I don't know. Largest audiences in Roseville. Where is that? Is that California? Yeah, it's California.
I wonder if that's just San Francisco, but like...
It must be. But there are listens from all around the world. It's super, super cool looking at this map. Like, seriously, it's very humbling. It's been really cool to travel and do conferences, too, with this podcast going on, because people kind of will see me and be like, hey, where's your ukulele? That's also new. I used to not play. I mean, the story behind the ukulele started because I tore my ACL skiing in, like, I don't know, 2017?
Yeah.
And I then was gifted a ukulele, and I picked it up and started doing our intro songs with the ukulele instead of just singing them out loud like a dweeb.
And the reason why we have the intro songs at all is because we had a friend who was going to record us a intro song.
Yeah, he's a musician.
And he didn't do it.
Yeah, and we had to start the show, so we improvised. Those are some fun facts about us. I think I really loved talking about the CSS gripes.
Yeah.
CSS and JS. I was very skeptical at first. I love it now.
Yep.
I really like talking about DataViz too. We had a couple people on the show talking about interaction in DataViz, and those were really fun guests to have.
Yeah, I was going to say my favorite episode we've done is the DataViz one we did with Nadia and Shirley
at JSConf. And we were like, how can we find a quiet spot?
And it came out surprisingly clear. We were in Germany, and I had like lugged this massive mic along with me, and in a corner of a conference booth. It was some good times.
Yeah, those were good times. I remember one time we recorded with lapel mics.
Yes.
And it was so nice and so clear.
Yes, it was our accessibility episode.
Yeah. We should talk about accessibility again.
Okay, let's do it.
It's something that I feel like was trendy for a while, and then people kind of stopped talking about it, but it's just as important as it's ever been. And now with the proliferation of all these frameworks, it's like, it's really important to kind of keep that conversation going.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of those things where the Gatsby folk just did a pretty exhaustive analysis into routing and accessibility and how do people actually use the web when you kind of navigate through these spas or single page applications. And so I think there's some good, great new content that's out there we should kind of highlight.
So before we, I can't believe we've been recording for a bit now. before we wrap this up, I want to ask you about the future. What are your predictions for the future of the web? Let's say in 1 year, in 5 years, and in 10 years.
Okay. In 1 year, What part are we talking about?
Just general.
Okay.
Things you were interested in.
I have one for five years. I think in 5 years, the methodology that David Khursheed with his state machines has been espousing for a while will actually be taking off. And most of us will imagine, why did we ever build apps a different way?
We just did an episode on state machines last week.
Five years.
My commentary on this was, this sounds exactly like what we were doing 10 years ago with model view controller apps. What's the difference?
It's not model view controller. It's because it's one of those things where you're doing a lot more emphasis on modeling out. Now, modeling is just a verb here. Modeling out your state before you do it. And so everything is very defined, and so there's less ambiguity in your code base. So I think
it's like the trend of TypeScript also.
Yes, yeah. I think TypeScript will take off even more than it is now. All this is only for like the bleeding edge stuff, I guess. You know, there's a set of apps that are always kind of near the edge, and then there's a set of apps that are still doing WordPress, which is perfectly fine. And I think those will stay around forever and dominate most of the web. But I think on the edge, you'll find a lot more back-endy thoughts moving to the front end, I guess.
I think that we're going to see a lot more codeless websites too. So, for example, when you brought up WordPress, like they've created Gutenberg, which is a way to sort of build websites in a GUI again. It's kind of like that GUI coming back, and with Webflow, who also supports us in the show. Like, thank you for doing that. They never ask us to read an ad, but we like to shout them out at the end. They just announced they're doing like a conference too, a codeless conference about web development, which is so interesting. And I can see that kind of picking up movement, because for so long, designers have been told, like, you have to learn to code, and kind of been resentful, I think, a little bit. And so it's giving a lot of power back to design and to like making the web weird. And we've seen the shift of making the web weird again, which I think is going to, over the next year to 3 years, increase. But I think by 5 years' time, that's going to decrease again. It's going to get more simplified again, because I think that web design definitely goes in these waves.
Yeah.
And 5 years ago, web... like, it's not web 2.0. It was like flat design.
Yes.
Flat design was like at its peak and almost like ending, really.
Yes.
It was just like peak flat design. And that's because technology like allowed us to do that.
Correct.
And now we're seeing a lot of texture, a lot of movement on the web, because again, technology is allowing us to do that. I feel like in 5 years, again, there's going to be sort of a callback to making things really performant, simple.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. I also, my predictions are for the style worlds. I think Houdini will be how people write code for CSS.
You think so? In 5 years? Or wait, wait.
I think in 5 years, there will be Houdini plugins that are going to imitate JavaScript polyfills for styling things.
Okay.
And there's going to be a community of this.
Okay.
I think in 5 years, it will definitely be taking off. It will definitely be used.
Yeah.
That's my prediction, you know.
Okay.
I think in 10 years, React is going to be like, people will make fun of it as being old.
Okay, here's the thing. I disagree with that because I think React will evolve over time. It's one of those things where I think it's got the correct model for scalability and change. I don't
disagree with you, but based on the history of web technologies, for example, MooTools, jQuery, everything ever has existed on the web that was a tool that people used that became popular is now something that people associate with a certain time on the web.
Yes.
And I think that right now we're in peak React time.
Peak React.
I think we're in peak React. I think that we're seeing other technologies emerge. Svelte, we just had a show on that.
Yeah.
There's this push against dependencies too, and against having a large app inside of its own container, making things more native to the web again.
Here's the reason why I think you're right. We're in peak React, but the reason why I don't think React will fade the way that other things have faded is because one, it's funded by Facebook, whereas I think prior things were like the jQuery had a jQuery foundation, but it wasn't funded the same way where people were invested in actually changing it and improving it. I think things like Svelte come along and say, hey, we have a better way of doing things. Like Svelte's compiler first methodology, I think React will have to adopt it at some point, right? I don't know when, but I'm guesstimating that React will have a longer shelf life than the previous frameworks because of the amount of funding it has and you know, Facebook's reliance on React to be useful to power, you know, Facebook. So
I hear you. I think that's a good point for sure.
I get it.
I think it'll have a longer shelf life than previous technologies.
Yes, but nothing lasts forever.
I will also say that jQuery had funding. It was an open source project that did have funding for like bugs, things like that. I also feel like right now we're in a stage where we're starting to normalize funding open source.
Yeah.
And like peer-to-peer funding as well. And that sort of started with Patreon. Now GitHub has integrated that as a new feature on their website.
Yeah.
So I think that we'll see more open source funding, which is great because then more people can get involved. We can make it more accessible to a variety of people with new opinions and like really improve the technology and make it more diverse.
Yeah.
So I'm stoked about that. I'm really excited to see honestly what the next 4 years
my other big thing is that AR will become a much bigger thing, and I'm so excited for that.
I've been waiting for that to happen honestly for so long now.
Listen, I you know, you pull up your phone and Google Maps now has an AR thing.
Yeah,
and that really thing cool. is bonkers. It's like, it's so cool. And so like,
I still think that's like one off because I think that AR is kind of gimmicky still. But I think that ML is absolutely going to change how we work, how we code, and how we like interact with the world.
Yes.
So ML apps are like just starting to really figure themselves out. At I/O this year, it was so cool to be there and see all the like ML in action, like how fast the machines learn and how little resources they need. It's kind of scary.
It's one of those things where like I feel like the way we code today will not be the way we code in 5 years. One of the things that people love pointing out is that game developers have all these UI tools where they can like assemble things, and games are built in Unity Studio, right? So there still is code, of course, but like it's a much different kind of code.
That's kind of what I'm saying about this like codeless movement, where I think it will still be a superpower to be a designer who can write code and has the toolkit to be able to put things together in a way that's more efficient and faster and expresses your vision. And that's kind of always been the case, like in the Dreamweaver days, in the Flash days, but I'm seeing a new resurgence of it, and I'm hoping that the code that is spit out from these compilers and these programs is good. Mm. And that, I think, is where the biggest challenge is in terms of that. And I agree with you. I don't think that we will be writing websites repetitively anymore. I think that things will be much more simplified. We'll be using tools. We'll be using ML to create layouts. And that's going to be fun.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, are people still going to be using React, or is it going to be something else?
Well, I think it'll be called React ML or something, you know. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. So that's today's show. We hope that you enjoyed this sort of trip into the past and into the future. I do want to say thank you to our sponsors today. Again, our sponsor is Datadog. You can get a free dashboard and a free t-shirt at datadog.com/toolsday. Also, thank you to Webflow for being our patron on Patreon. Thank you for listening. And if you've been listening since day one, oh my gosh, you deserve all the hugs.
Well,
send us a tweet and we'll like write you a card or something. If you like this show, please send it to a friend, send it to your coworkers. That's how we grow and that's how we can reach more people. And that's all we have this week. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.